Did you ever have any kind of doubts as to, one, whether the boat would be allowed to leave the harbour, and secondly, whether, when you anchored, whether there would be some move to actually intercept the boat?
Well, first of all, I had sufficient faith in Ronan and the crowd to know that he wouldn't have invested all these close to £1 million in getting a ship up there in his father's harbour, and all of us sort of being eating and drinking merrily there, and getting all these huge Mercedes-Benz diesels and God knows what else we had on board, unless there was a pretty good chance we were going to leave it. I mean, we pretty obviously were going to leave the harbour. There was some discussion at that time whether we were going to have London, as we called the Felixstowe Anchorage, and whether Alan Crawford, who had Atlanta, who just sailed across the Atlantic from Texas, was going to have the Isle of Man. There was that's another story. That's a whole story in itself, the slight war as to who had which location. But in a nutshell, I obviously had every faith in Ronan and the planning of the organization, the making of the tapes and the buying of the equipment, as I say. So I more or less relied that we would leave harbor, and I longed for the time. The second part of your question, did I think there'd be any mood at the other end? Yes, I did presume there would be some form of challenge. And look forward to it, actually. We, as you probably know, we had to be in international waters, Peter, right?
Yes.
And so we were something like 3.5 or 4 miles off the coast, I think. And one day, I just happened to be on the air. It was one of my shows. Mind you, I was on the air a lot in those days, as it wasn't a done thing to be a pirate DJ, but we used to do sometimes 6 or 7 or 8 hours a day on air. You know, one of us even did a whole day's broadcasting by himself. I always remember that. Very funny. But it just happened I was on air, and suddenly this ship appears in sort of off the, I must get my nautical terms, off the port quarter, and it turned out to be a customs boat called something like the Venturus or some name like that, which hailed us through its loud hailer, saying, "Permission to come aboard, inspect your stores." Well, the Dutch captain, he didn't actually want this to happen. And we all knew, of course, that we were in our rights, that they had no right to inspect us at all. And so immediately, as it was something new happening on the show that particular day, instead of talking about the seagulls and the jellyfish and the temperature, I suddenly said, oh, there's a ship off the port quarter. It looks like Her Majesty's Customs and Excise vessel. Of course, not realizing that, as one was saying that, Her Majesty's Customs ashore were actually quite freaking, because they'd realized that the ship was coming alongside but didn't anticipate the progress of it being transmitted to the whole of the southeast coast. So eventually one man said, well, the captain actually said, well, no, you can't come on. Sorry. Very sorry, you cannot come on the ship. I can't do Dutch accent very well. Sorry, my apologies to our Dutch listeners. You can't come on, he said. So the Venturist then said, well, we're coming ashore. We're bringing a man with us. We're coming on board your ship, and we're going to look at your stores. So the captain got this message, promptly passed it to me, and I promptly passed it out to the listeners, saying, well, I think we're going to be boarded. Everyone stand by, batten down the hatches. Well, suddenly, as they were just about to lower their ship, their little sort of dinghy or whatever it was off the Venturus, they stopped, and obviously my sort of commentary of what the captain was doing had reached shore. Shore had subsequently instructed its radio station to send a message to the ship saying, don't go on board, running a commentary on you. So that was the end of that. That was the only real serious challenge that ever came along, in that somebody wanted actually to step on board Caroline.
There must be some other memorable events which did occur, you know, after the station had begun to run normally.
Was there ever a normally? I don't think we ever had a normally, actually, Peter, with great respect, but I know what you mean. Yes, punching out the signal. Yeah, there were lots of things that happened, really. Lots of things. When I think that I'm 10 years older, it's absolutely mind-blowing. How I can remember all these things happening, I don't know, but it's really amazing the way it's gone by so quickly. I think we should have those days back. But getting back to your point, I was just thinking then, going 10 years back in my mind, as to what things stood out. There was one occasion which was very funny, because, as you probably know, there's a United States Air Force base near Felixstowe. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, the American pilots, when they took off and did their thing, whatever their particular thing was, in Phantoms, they used to home in on us, they used to tell us. They used to home in on Caroline instead of on their base, because, I mean, it was something, there was some music for them to listen through in their And one day, we were, it was summer, 64 summer, it was a very still ocean, very, very still, like a mill pond, and the seagulls were sort of lazily doing their thing. And we were up on top of the deck, and I was running the show lying in the sun, because I had some cans, I had a microphone on my chest, that's right, and a transistor radio at my ear, and every time the record started to finish, I would normally assume that my microphone would be made live, so I'd just speak when there was silence, knowing that the engineer underneath would have made it live. So I did my show without moving an eyelash. It was very funny. Anyway, I'm doing this lying in the sun one afternoon. We used to take it in turns, actually, to run each other's show. Some would lie in the sun and some would do the engineering underneath. We sort of took it in turns. I was lying there one day, and suddenly there's the most amazing noise, right? Most incredible noise. And it's two phantoms coming by. United States Air Force markings, yellow helmet of the pilot in the front. You could almost see his name stenciled on it. And everything was down, right? The flaps were down, the speed brakes were out, the arrestor hook was down, the wheels were down. And they were very, very low. I suppose they can't have been much more than 50 feet. They were lower than the mast. They came by and looked at us, and then they sort of went away and did a wheel around. And during that time, I said, couple of United States here, folks. We'll play the record and put on something corny like the St. Louis Blues or something, you know. Keep them abused. And they came back very slowly again, and we took some photographs of them. And then they sort of blasted away. Everything folded up, the arrestor hook slid back, the wheels came up and up. They went into the wild blue yonder. And that was the end of that, we thought. Well, about, I suppose, 10 minutes later, the ship was shook. And what they'd done, they'd gone up to really high height, right? They'd gone up to some amazing height, like 30, 40 thousand. And they'd come down and done a transonic dive on us, and the whole ship shook. They had decided to, like, blast us with a sonic boom, right?
Yeah.
And they had aimed the whole boom at the ship, one after the other, and the first one just shook everything. It shook the needle off the record, and everyone, the beer fell off the tables, right? And everyone was just picking themselves up again, and the next one came down and gave us number two. And they roared by us, waving. It was all rather merry, you know?
Fun. Yeah. Sounds like fun. Anyway, Simon, I must close with you, but is there anything final that you would like to say to the listeners? And
Well, Herman Speed, it's, first of all, I would just like to say that, as always, I believe in freedom, and all our friends do, and the spoken word, and the word of honest love and peace from all the youngsters of the world. And if we can put it out on radio, then let's keep doing it. I think 10 years... they've been an amazing 10 years in the history of pop music, and I hope there's going to be another 10 years like them. And as far as I'm concerned, I count it as a privilege and a great honor to have been involved at the start of it all. And, well, good luck to you and all the gang.
Well, it's been very nice talking to you, Simon.
Thank you, Peter. It's been extremely kind of you to phone me.
I hope that dial of yours remains firmly on 259.
259, the sounds are divine.
That's it.
God bless.
Bye-bye, Simon.
Peace to you all.